have done it without you. The listener is our foundation, and our thanks must be known. We appreciate your continued choice of CJSF 90.1 FM on the airwaves.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Canadian Philosophy Show. I'm your host for tonight, Hale, and with me is Aaron and Brandon. Today we're going to be talking, you know, loosely about what a legitimate and illegitimate state looks like and why they are that way. I came up with some very amateur criteria from my own kind of ponderings on the subject that we'll go over. We can talk a bit about how some states meet that criteria, how some states partially meet it. But I think we're probably going to focus more on states that really don't meet that criteria to highlight why they're important. You know, sometimes in philosophy, to figure out what is, like, the best way to do that is to figure out what is not or why not. So that's kind of like a classic little trick we'll do. We'll figure out basically how do people screw it up to figure out what a good state actually looks like. With that, I want to like talk a little bit, just briefly open up with the kind of exchange interaction that I had this week that really got me thinking on the topic. So I'll start with that, because that's how I kind of, like I said, that's how I got started thinking about it. And for some of our listeners may know, I know Brandon knows, you know, I've aside from philosophy, I've always been really into history, especially great empires, colonization, wars, revolutions, all the crazy stuff that went on that period. And I'm on some online forums in regards to history subjects. And on one of those forums that I was on, someone posted a photo, which is a relatively common type of photo, probably from almost certainly from 1945, of an American GI holding a bunch of what are effectively Nazi items in Germany. So there were daggers and pistols and hats and things. This is a very common, not just in that period, but through all sorts of wars, invading armies, conquering armies. People would basically pick up souvenirs while they were there, right? And, you know, there's a lot of discussion around that. Some people call it looting. Some people think it's okay for various reasons, you know, all this kind of stuff. But in the conversation online, someone posted this to say, basically, here's an interesting photo, right? Because in a lot of these places online, people will post photos and people will discuss them, try to figure out details, all that kind of stuff, right? Little window into the past. Well, this photo kind of, to my surprise, drummed up a bit of controversy and arguments, because basically there were a number of people who commented, essentially saying that the photo is... What the person in the photo was doing was deplorable, that they were wrong for taking that stuff, that they were wrong for collecting that, that it's evil, that it's looting, that all this kind of stuff, blah 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 blah. And I looked at the photo and I looked at the situation. And I came to the realization. I was like, I don't actually see anything wrong with this photo, right? What, like, here is an American soldier, circa end of World War II, carrying a bunch of what are effectively Nazi state trinkets and propaganda pieces from, you know, a very well-deserved fallen foe. And it really got me thinking, because my initial reaction was like, it was fine. Like, if I was transported to that day and I was watching him pick up some of this stuff, I wouldn't be like, bro, what are you doing? This is like an unethical move you're making right now. I'd be like, that's okay. But it really got me asking, of course, being a little amateur philosopher, why do I think that's okay? Am I wrong for thinking okay? Why do I think that's okay? And basically, my mind went to the place of, or I came to the conclusion that the state from which he took those items was not legitimate. It did not have a right to exist, essentially. The Nazi state, the Third Reich, if you want to call it that, whatever, however you want to call it, was a criminal enterprise through and through, and its trappings and pieces and materiel didn't have the same relationship to a legitimate or owner relationship of ownership to a legitimate state entity that was effectively deserved respect. And the individuals who held up that state, participated in it to greater or lesser degrees, fell under those same sorts of consequences, right? You know, and to think of it another way, it's kind of like, I ended up getting into some discussions with some people on this, and they were like, again, people were saying this is looting, all this kind of stuff. And the point that I brought up or I thought about was, you know, it's one thing, again, let's go back to 1945, let's be the soldier, let's soldier in some German town, city, wherever it is. It's one thing to bust into someone's house and take their personal clothing, their jewelry, their food, whatever, right? Hold them at gunpoint, however it went down. And that stuff certainly did happen. It happened by all sides, all this kind of stuff. But it's another thing to go up to a German officer, perhaps an officer in the SS or some other like extremely criminal organization, and be and tell them to hand over their medals or their hat, right, or the cap or whatever it might be. And the reason is what strange it may sound, is, again, there's a sense in which some states or the people that participate in them don't deserve the same kind of respect of legitimacy and sanctity based upon how they function and the actions that they undertake. And I think there's a whole bunch of different pieces to that, but it's kind of like, you know, at a certain point, there are certain states that operate more like criminal enterprises, more like criminal cult enterprises, however you want to go on, and less like actual states, even though they might have the trappings a little bit of a state, they're not really a state. And so the more and more I thought about this, this was my little window into this kind of exploration, I started to come up with some very basic ideas of what is a legitimate state. What criteria do you actually have to meet? And how do some states not meet them? So we'll go through those. We can discuss them. There are things that I actually made up on the fly, and I did that on purpose. I didn't want to look too much into it because there are, I know from past readings, there are great, you know, there are people who have delineated this far better than I, but I wanted to really think from my own mind, like, what are some things that I think are necessary for a state to have, and how do some states not fulfill them? And like, we will be talking quite a bit about the Third Reich today because it's a state in which basically none of the criteria are met. It's the kind of paradigm case. But there's some other examples that we'll look at as well, which I kind of call a term pseudo-states, where like some are kind of met, but others are just also completely not ignored for one reason or another.
It's an interesting sort of situation to come into a philosophical question. The thing that immediately comes to my mind with this is that there must be so much more context in everyone's minds than or anyone who's kind of listening might have in a specialist forum like this. You know, you're coming together to discuss photos and you probably know a lot. You can bring a lot to the discussion of these photos. But one of the things that comes to my mind is that the looting, specifically because we're talking about a situation here, the looting of these items, and we're discussing the legitimacy or illegitimacy of taking or possessing these items, the thing that comes to my mind is that the Nazi state's form of production of these items may have something to do with the legitimacy or illegitimacy of possessing them, because I think you're right to say that, you know, the American taking these does have a sort of, not a right, but there's a permissibility to it. The permissibility to it that jumps to my mind is that, well, the state that produced them didn't have a legitimate claim to the production, the form of production that produced these, because all things have to be produced, or all artifacts are produced out of something. And it seems like the Nazi state was particularly arranged in such a way as to create things in a very illegitimate way. So that's one of the things that comes to my mind.
I think that this is a very difficult question in terms of what a legitimate state is and should be, because it's a very complex question. And it's also very contextually tied to the era and the specific states that you're talking about. I don't mean to be evasive, but I mean, we've seen several works try to tackle this question. I mean, you could say that the second half of the 20th century after World War II has basically, at least from the perspective of North Americans, has been that question of what is a legitimate state, and if there's something is an illegitimate state, what is the proper and ethical response to that? That essentially has been the North American question for the United States and Canada for the better half of the 20th century. And I think we're still figuring that out. So it's difficult, but I'm looking forward to the discussion.
I want to say again, like, the criteria that we'll discuss here, and you guys can certainly add to it or debunk it if you don't like it. It's just stuff that I came up with, kind of pondering this whole idea that came to me through this interaction. I recognize that it's, like I said, like, there are people who were far more intelligent than I thinking about this problem for far longer than a couple days on and off. But, you know, it's fun to try and dig in a little bit sometimes. And I really like also, Brandon, what you brought up about how there's certain there's origins to items that make them legitimate or illegitimate. And to add on to that, well, I'm sure we'll discuss this more, there's also functions to items as well, right? So if you are wearing, so one of the items that was this person was holding this exact photo was some kind of dress dagger, which is effectively a for parades and stuff like that and official functions. Well, you know, if you have a dress dagger that's for official functions that are for completely unethical, you know, means or reasons, you know, like, what legitimacy does that item actually have in the context that it's supposed to be used? And can it be released at any time from that, given the fact that it shouldn't be there in the first place? Just like you're saying, in terms of it being created, it shouldn't have been made in the first place to begin with, if we're looking at things from a relatively morally righteous standpoint. States must be made up of citizens and have clearly defined boundaries. So what I mean by that is people must understand that they are within the state. You know, that's not going to be universal agreement, but that basically people must understand that they are a part, that they are within and a part of the state, and that that state must physically be somewhere in some place in some time. States don't exist willy-nilly all over the place, sometimes here, sometimes then. I mean, obviously there's breakups, history is complicated, but like, you can't have a state that's Australia one day and then the next day Australia is actually Brazil, right? Like, it just doesn't make sense. It's kind of obvious, it's clear. The other thing about that, though, that I want to bring up, and this is bringing in some, we can think about the Third Reich for this, but we can also think another really good example would be the Confederate States of America. It doesn't make, to my mind, it doesn't make sense to have a legitimate state where most of your population isn't actually a member of that state, right? And there's this kind of background recognition of humanity that individuals participate, that states are for people to participate in, and people have to be able to be citizens in some sense. And I want to emphasize, and you guys will notice, and listeners will notice, that I don't talk about democracy at all in this. I don't think that states necessarily have to be democratic. Maybe that could be a part of it. Maybe that's the ideal. But you could basically, it doesn't really make sense to me, at least, to have a state that's made up largely of slaves, for example. How can a very large portion of your population, or any portion really, but let's just say a very large portion, in this case, think about the Confederacy, where something like a quarter or a third of the population was enslaved. How, to me at least, how does that make sense that that's a legitimate operation, where most of the people that are under your suzerainty don't actually get to call themselves members of the state?
I think that the idea of citizenship is definitely an evolving concept that we see through history. And just to flesh out a few more historical examples here, probably the easiest example is, well, I'll start with a basic premise, and that is that almost universally throughout human history, citizenship has either been hereditary, you are a citizen because your parents are citizens, or it's something that is earned or given. Basically, the three ways you can get citizenship are, well, you get it from a government. It's either earned, given, or inherited. And those have been basically the three main ways that you can get citizenship. Now, if we look at a society such as Sparta, which was basically a military camp by design, and citizenship was, generally speaking, and I might be speaking wrongly here, only given to males, and you had to earn your citizenship through physical prowess. And if you were unable to earn your citizenship by physical prowess, then you were not considered to be a Spartan. You didn't have citizenship under that state and that system. Now, why was that important? Why was physical prowess important? Because the Spartan state was actually primarily a state that operated by slavery. They controlled vast amount of other people groups through physical domination. And so in order for their societies to survive, they had to basically control their citizenry very tightly in some fashions, especially with when it came to military contact. If we looked at the city of ancient Athens, there was a controversy early in their history about whether or not citizenship could be bought and sold. And that resulting in the creation of Athenian democracy and the abolishment of the practice of selling citizenship, because essentially the rich of Athens were taking advantage of loans against citizenry to commit to slavery the poor citizens of Athens. So to put a stop to this, the system of direct democracy was basically invented. So I think this is a pretty good criteria to start with. And I mean, you could also look at ancient Rome for a country that had, or a state that had, a third to a quarter of the citizenry in slavery. So we've seen examples of these systems in the past. They've had to fight very, very hard for their survival, and they, generally speaking, have relied on merit-based citizenship systems rather than inheritance-based citizenry or government-granting citizen or citizenship based off of some kind of merit or privilege. So that's kind of something important to note, and I think that will help further the discussion.
Yeah, and I'm really happy you brought that up. Thanks so much, Aaron. And I think what immediately comes to my mind as you were saying that I should make a little footnote or say a little aside here, which is something about legitimacy and illegitimacy, because obviously there are histories full of states that aren't going to meet all this criteria. And in its simplest form, what I think of when I think of illegitimacy is there a right to revolt, to turn against the state, either internally or externally, you know, for the right reasons, right? So if these criteria basically aren't being met, individuals have a right to say this state is not legitimate. Again, I'm not going to say that my criteria are like the best ever, but I would hope, in theory, if these were all met, this ideal state would be one where a revolution on legitimate grounds wouldn't make a whole lot of sense. But as you pointed, Rome was another great example. We can think about the Spartacus uprising, which was a massive slave uprising in the second century BC, I want to say. Nobody's going to look back in history, or at least I don't think anyone in this panel, and I hope none of our listeners are going to look back and say, you know, how dare Spartacus do that? How dare those slaves living under, you know, the Roman Republic get together and say, this is unfair, this is unjust, we're being kept in slavery, you know, how dare they not respect the state? And so I think that's when I talk about illegitimacy, that's the same thing. And it doesn't have to be within, it can also be from without, right? Going again to example like the Confederacy versus, you know, the North, or even more clearly, again, we could talk about the Third Reich, where the world, essentially most of the world was like this state, quote unquote, cannot continue, right? Like it has to be stopped. And there's legitimate reasons for that. So that's when we talk about legitimacy. Illegitimacy is basically like, can people have, do have people have the right reason to rise up and say something?
Going back to your first criteria, you talked about citizenry. What was the second part of their first criteria? So the right to have citizens and then establish borders, right? Okay, establish borders. So that seems to me to equate with what we regard today as international international treaties with other nations, international recognition. That's what I wanted to say. When a nation has well-established borders, when it has strong international recognition between it and neighboring nations. So that's we don't want to go too far into semantics because I would like to hear the rest of your criteria. But in the modern day, especially when it comes to things like the United Nations, what is and what is not a nation is often up to the discretion of those nations that are already designated as nations. So international recognition plays a very large part today in terms of what we consider a legitimate nation under UN regulations and what is not. Although what a nation is and what a state is are not the same. So I should be careful that we're not muddling the water with too much terminology.
Yeah, and really that formulation came to mind for me, basically, like I kind of hinted at earlier, because, you know, and I recognize that these are very general and there's all sorts of nuances in them, but really it comes down to, like, there has to be some sense of where and when that state is, right? Like, it can't just be random or wherever. And the people living within it and who are operating it also have to be able to understand that too, right? A part of the reason why an international corporation is not a state, for there are other reasons too, but I mean, it's not necessarily, it has the same sense of locale that a state would. The next criteria that I have is somewhat controversially, but I guess these are ideal. The primary aim of a state must be the good, quote unquote, of its citizens. I want to say when saying this that that doesn't mean it actually has to fulfill that necessarily all the time at every moment. But my reason for thinking this was, you know, a state shouldn't be a business, for example, right? A state run, and there are states that certainly are run, especially even today, I was actually watching a documentary earlier today about Namibia. I was going to talk about specifically about nations in Africa, where you have states that are run by a select elite who operate, you know, who accumulate the vast majority of the wealth within that state and do not, and, you know, put it effectively into their back of their own pockets and operate their piece of land, their area and their government more like a business than a state. I guess that's the best way you could say it. And so there's, you know, the primary aim of the state is not to provide for, or at least in intention, help the citizens. It's literally being designed and operated to enrich a select few people. There's other ways you can look at that too. There's been states, you brought up Sparta in some ways, which is perhaps a good example of a state that's meant to effectively be an army. Before we were talking in the episode, we were talking about Prussia, which was a state, which was an effective state in many ways, but, you know, one of Prussia's main fundamental institutions for its entire existence was its military, and basically huge amounts of the state funds and organization and, you know, the best minds within the state of Prussia, all that kind of stuff, you could say, were focused on military advancement and military endeavors. And so it's, again, is that really for the good of the citizenry, or is there a specific component of a normal state or a select group who are benefiting, and that's specifically what the state, quote unquote, is designed for?
I think an interesting quote here, although I had to look up some details because I wasn't sure of its origin, but essentially, I think this has something to do with the Spartacus slave rebellions in Rome that we mentioned a little bit earlier. So there is a Roman satirical poet by the name of Juvenal who has this quote, which says, Already long ago, when we sold our vote to no man, the people have abdicated our duties. For the people who once upon a time handed out military command, high office, legions, everything, now restrains itself to and anxiously hopes for just two things, bread and circuses. And so there's this idea that the Roman state is somehow becoming illegitimate. It's abdicating its responsibility towards its people, and instead it's just giving them surface level things, so such as entertainment and bread, rather than the opportunities to advance and grow and seek better things. That's kind of, I guess you could say, the lowest form of state is a state that is just interested in kind of keeping the people in line, so to speak, and just giving them the basic necessities to keep them where they are.
Yeah, I was just going to add, well, maybe this is a criteria that you go into later, because it seems to just touch on the good part of it, but I would think that a legitimate state would have its citizens good in mind, but it would also have the good of other states in mind as well. This seems to be a check against war, but I'm thinking of this specifically because we have the enormous counterexample of the Third Reich, which was not good for other states.
Why don't I bring up the next one, which is related to the first, which is states must be able to provide on some level for its citizens. The state must be able to provide on some level for its citizens. To go into that a little bit, again, the states aren't meant to meet these perfectly, but what I basically mean is, if a state can't actually operate and function and essentially reach its citizens in benefiting or at least trying to do good for them, these individuals that are essentially outside of its purview but should be within its purview, do they have they essentially gain the right to say the state is illegitimate? So a modern example would be, again, looking at Africa, there are countries such as, the one I know a little bit about actually is Ethiopia, because I've traveled through Ethiopia, but also reading a little bit about countries like Central African Republic and stuff like that. All other things being equal, these are states where the state structure and power exists effectively only in urban areas. So on a map, you might have a state that looks like, you have a nation that looks like a certain area, it might be quite large or whatever, but in reality, that state does not function in most of the country that it's supposed to function within. And it really comes to be as simple as that. If the state actually can't show up for most of the population, at least in some level, like I'll tell you from my own personal experience of being within, I spent a number of weeks traveling through Ethiopia and actually drove to most of the country. Outside of relatively large urban areas, the Ethiopia is dominated effectively by clans, and the only notice that you get from the government is the occasional military checkpoint on the main road. And so it's hard to see from that point of view how these different clans and ethnic groups in a country like Ethiopia, which unsurprisingly has fallen into a kind of civil war currently. I haven't looked up it recently, but and it's quite a tragic situation, but it disintegrated effectively. And that's, I think, a part of that. Even when I was traveling through the country, I thought to myself, like, the government isn't here. Like, where I am right now, the people who are in control here, the people who have power, and the people who provide for the individuals here and organize and set up systems, they aren't the state back in Addis Ababa, which is the capital of Ethiopia, right? They are different groups, clans, different ethnic groups, religious groups, those sorts of things, right? And it's difficult to see how, they have to actually respect that state, right? Because that state doesn't actually show up for them in any meaningful way. So that was my other criteria, thinking specifically about that example. And unfortunately, there are a number of other examples within Africa in particular, other places in the world as well, but Africa in particular, unfortunately, there are quite a number of states currently where the government literally doesn't have power, control, and by extension, the ability to provide for what would be its citizens in large portions of the country. Generally, these are in rural areas. That's kind of like the standard, is that the government will have power in the city, but not in the countryside. And there are oftentimes many difficult conflicting reasons for this. But at the end of the day, it's difficult to see how individuals